You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way.
Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 192. And my name is Clark from Five Card Guys on Instagram and fivecardguys.com. Co-hosting with me, as usual, is John, who is Trade You at Recess on IG. And we got Will back for another episode. All right, off the top, guys. I know we've talked a lot already on the pod about the 2024 Top Series 1 baseball set that's coming out, I believe, in a week or two. But there was another announcement made by Topps, and I think it's actually pretty big news. That announcement was that the 2024 Top Series 1 blaster boxes will have redemption cards inserted for signed baseballs and other memorabilia. Okay, and I think it's an exclusive for blaster boxes. So thoughts, what do you guys think about this? Would this make you buy more blasters rather than a hobby box even?
The initial news of it, I think, was pretty cool. You know, the initial reaction is, oh, that's great. Give some chase and some value back to the little guys and the dads right. and moms with their kids. I think it's a great initial reaction. And then the business side of it, you're kind of like, okay, I kind of get it too, because they don't want to lose the supply demand of selling blasters for $40-$50. So they basically have to add a little bit more to continue to entice people on the demand at that price point without having to, you know, revert back to going back to $30 or, you know, obviously, like, if I was, you know, like the Topps president, I would be working hard diligently to keep that price point as much as I can and not ever have to revert back to $30 or $25 or $22. Right. So. Right. From a business standpoint, it makes sense, but for the time being, just looking at it, yeah, I think it's great. And who knows how hard this is to get? It might be extremely difficult, and it might be almost like a non-news point when you're actually ripping. But it is good to see that blasters are getting some value. I'd probably try it. Like it's an easy entry point, right, in terms of money.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. I think so, and I like to point out to our American listeners, the price points you were saying were Canadian prices.
Right, yeah? Right. My apologies.
People were like, oh.
It's like $5. $5 American.
Yeah, $5 Canadian. $50. $5 American.
You know what? I think the price point matters. Like, if they are going to sell retail boxes for close to $50 Canadian, I don't know why I would rip a retail box over a hobby that's going to be like 100. I don't think it's enough incentive for me to want to open retail boxes, but I think for people who are wanting to open retail, or maybe that's just like the price point that they can hit, it's really cool that they're coming up with different rewards for those buyers, for those collectors. I love the idea that they had previously with like holiday related inserts, even if they were numbered, like the bat, the Halloween stuff, right? Like the bat was like out of 10 or some cat or something like that. Like, I think it's cool. It's like me as a collector, when I go for rainbows, I don't even consider those as cards to collect. Like, I just completely ignore them. If someone's like, oh, did you collect the Halloween set? I'd be like, no, of course not. That's for kids. Like, and so it's good. Like the kids who want to collect and the kids who want to chase, they have these numbered cards or they have these memorabilia and different rewards and stuff like that. So I really like the idea. I mean, it's way better than opening a box of retail and having a manufactured relic that's completely useless. So
yeah, those are the worst.
Yeah, so good for them for creating a little bit more of a chase. So I like it.
But you still go for the hobby box, eh? Even if it's a one autograph or one relic, is you still got that kind of coin flip.
Yeah, I honestly wish that that's my big wish, that Fanatics would change that, because I am getting skunked.
Like a guaranteed
just auto. One guaranteed auto, please. Yeah, like
is it not guaranteed auto this year? It is, isn't it?
Is it?
I don't think so.
I could have sworn we talked about that.
Because if it is, I
just double check, but on the marketing material, it says one auto, like on all the websites, it says one auto or one relic. Oh, so I don't know.
Yeah. So you know I'm going to be hitting all those relics. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like you guys, I love it because I buy blasters anyway. I rarely buy like hobby boxes of certain sets, you know, like even like Heritage. You know, like I love Heritage, but I'll just buy one blaster just to get a fix,
really?
Right?
Wow. Yeah.
Like I don't buy the hobby box. I'll buy a hobby box of Top Series 1 because that's like $100 or so, right? But, and I'll take the chance of getting a relic or auto. I think I have better luck than Will. I usually get the auto, you know? but for other sets, this is a great incentive for me, not just to buy one blaster. I might buy even two now. You know, if I know that I'm not going to buy a hobby box, I'll splurge and try to get that too. And, you know, I probably won't get the redemption card anyways, but it's a good way to get people, you know, to buy more blasters, I guess. We'll see how that plays out. And I'm sure there'll be more content out there of people hitting these redemption cards. So that'll be kind of cool to see what the signed memorabilia are too, right? Like which players, you know, who signed what. And it'll be kind of cool to see if it's like, you know, even one of the stud players like J-Rod or Acuna, who are a big part of their marketing plans, apparently, right? For Tops. So yeah, we'll see. All right, let's go on now to today's hobby headlines. All right, so every time there's a profile or major interview that involves Michael Rubin, CEO of Fanatics, we always like to review the article and highlight anything interesting that might have been said in the interview. Now, the most recent article in the New York Times, I think a couple weeks ago, or maybe even a week ago, it was titled, "Will Fanatics Upend the World of Sports Collectibles?" Okay. And there was a lot that wasn't really new, to tell you the truth. You know, like it's something Michael Rubin has said in other interviews on other podcasts, but there were some interesting quotes. So I'll go over a few of them and then we could just talk about whether we agree or disagree with it, or if we had any other thoughts that might be related to what was said. All right, so I'll start with some of the context. And one of the paragraphs, it says, 2 years ago, Fanatics reached a deal to become the exclusive trading card partner of Major League Baseball and the baseball players unions. It then bought Topps, the iconic trading card maker, for roughly $500 million, becoming a kingpin in an industry worth an estimated $44 billion, according to Verified Market Research, a data firm. So that's some context for you. We knew about the $500 million purchase of Topps. I didn't know about the $44 billion worth of the industry, but that sounds like a pretty big number. Right. And the first quote I want to talk about is from Mike Mahan, who leads Fanatics Collectibles, right? And he says, "This is an industry that's lived in the shadows for all intents and purposes, and now we're bringing a degree of prominence and relevance to it and making it cool, fun, and exciting." So do you think Fanatics has done that? or does this have a long way to go in terms of making the hobby cool, fun, and exciting?
Yeah, I think he's getting a little bit ahead of himself, if we're being honest, and taking way too much credit. I think. You know, if we're being honest, the sports card industry kind of fell ass backwards into this craze because of COVID. I mean, so many collectibles did, right? People are collecting like wine bottles, Rolex watches, you know, art pieces, CDs. So it was just a part of that huge rush. And I don't think Fanatics or anybody, even Topps, or I don't think anybody really deserves to take any credit for all of it. It's sort of almost happenstance. But we'll see if, you know, I think the three of us like to say it's cool, but that's just within the hobby.
We know what people say
that are not a part of this. That's probably the wrong word, but yeah. I mean, they're obviously, you know, the part about living in the shadows, I think I understand that context from a marketing perspective, right? Fanatics, these guys are marketing monsters, and it's very clear. We've talked about this many times. The hobby has not been marketed at all. So I think that's going to be the difference factor here in what's coming up in trying to make it cool, trying to make it relevant. I think there's a lot that needs to happen because it's also coinciding, and we haven't talked about this as much, but like their efforts are also coinciding with this possible junk wax 2.0 era, right? Like we could be very much about to or are in the thick of junk wax, whether we realize it or not. So Fanatics may, in my opinion, have a way bigger job here than they may be thinking, right? Because when they first purchased it, this is when everything was going crazy. So it was like very easy to kind of say whatever you wanted because the market was just blossoming. But the state it is right now, I think they've got some work to do. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I like John said, I wouldn't say cool because the other day, I forget who I was talking to, but I mentioned that I every once in a while do a podcast with a couple friends and they're like, oh, awesome. Like, maybe I'll check it out. What's it about? And I said, oh, sports cards. And the person's face just like dropped. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And like, you know, like all three of us, our wives do not think we are cool when we're all
I haven't listened to one episode.
You're right. Like none of our wives think that we are cool because we love cards. And then the excitement factor, I mean, I get the same excitement factor when I open a box of cards as I do when I go to the casino and play blackjack. And that level of excitement is fleeting and dangerous and for some people very problematic. And I don't know that we want to say that it's like exciting. Like it's not exciting in any other way, right? But I get what he's saying. Like, you know, he's trying to open it to a broader audience. He's got to use some positive adjectives to make it kind of something that people want to check out.
Sure. But I get that too.
Yeah. But at the same time, come on, like cards have been around for hundreds of years and the people who think it's cool and fun and exciting, they'll be here forever. Right.
Right.
But we are like, what's it called? Is it the Marines? The few, the proud? Like <there's...
laughs> oh man, yeah. Come on. I'm definitely more optimistic than you guys, maybe. Hey, I have two boys, so they, you know, well, the older one, the 6-year-old, he definitely thinks it's cool.
Yeah. Right?
You know, so the younger generation might make it even. If it's going to be cool, it's going to be those guys making it cool, not us.
Yeah.
You know, but, we're just like, yeah.
Yeah. But if your kids think it's cool, or if your mom thinks it's cool, like if your mom thinks you're cool or your kids think you're cool, you're not cool. Yeah. Like it's not actually cool. So.
I see. Yeah. but you're kind of alluding to it, but I get where Mike Mahan's coming from, right? Like the marketing. You know, like making it more appealing to the broader audience, right? And I think you are right. Like what's exciting about it is the gambling aspect of it right now with the breakers and all that. But I think the hope or one of their hope is to make it appealing for more people as a collectible space. You know what I mean? Like just for cards to be cool to collect and almost like an art piece. Like art's kind of, you know, like not everyone's into it, but people still think it's like has some kind of prestige. You know, and you know, I think that's the image that Fanatics is trying to change. It's not these like, you know, church basement shows that you go to for sports cards anymore, right? It's like, oh, it's big conventions at these large convention centers, and here's a lot of these corporate, you know, companies coming into the space to make it more hipper, or you know, I don't know, you know what I mean, like to grow it, right? Like they always say. My two cents. You guys don't look convinced.
That sounds worse to me. I want more sellers at a show. And those sellers are usually sweaty and gross and have been sitting in the same seat for 3 days and not had proper meals and not had proper hygiene and not had enough sleep.
Oh, man. Come on. There's hipper guys that are selling these cards.
Sure. But then, you know, you go to those bigger shows and it's like there's so much corporate space and there's so much like buzz stuff that's going on. And like, I get it. That has to be there to help fund the show and fund the hobby, but it's not what I'm looking for. It's not why I'm at a show.
Fair.
Yeah.
To each their own. All right. We'll go to blurb two. And this we already talked about in the past, so we don't have to really go too deep into it, but I do want to mention it again. And it says in the article, quote,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Collecting world, Fanatics has tried to cut out middlemen to reduce costs. Topps now sells directly to almost 700 hobby shops, up from 180 before Fanatics bought it. And then we also knew, it says here, they also bought leading card printer GC Packaging, right? It says to improve quality and reliability. And they also bought the second largest online marketplace for cards, PWCC, which I, to tell you the truth, I kind of forget.
I totally forgot about that.
I didn't know. Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah, exactly. So they own a lot of hobby entities. And then the third blurb is connected to it. This is a quote from Michael Rubin. He says, they, meaning Panini, sued us for the very things they succeeded in doing over 15 years ago, present a more compelling model for sports properties and win rights from the incumbents. And then he goes on to say, the industry needed significant change and innovation, and they are now viewed as antiquated. So do you think that's a fair assessment by Michael Rubin of his main competitor, Panini America?
Did he drop the mic immediately after?
That'll be a good mic drop moment.
Laid a smackdown on them. Essentially, that whole quote is, na-na-na-boo-boo. We beat you. That's tough, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Hyung would also agree. You know, like if leaning on our other co-host, I would say, because he's usually on the side of marketing and Fanatics and business movement and stuff. And I would say the industry needing significant change, you know, old practices are viewed as antiquated. Yeah, I think I agree. Because Panini and Topps, in my view and perhaps in the view of many people, I think they've been really lazy. They've been very lucky to have had this huge burst in the industry, and they really haven't done anything to give back or to spend in marketing dollars or to provide more and more incentive for buyers. They just continue to print more and more and raise prices more and more and just take advantage. And if you know, hopefully something happens here between Panini and Fanatics, but on its current course, without Fanatics stepping in, we certainly would have been completely, you know, like jumping into the deep end of Junk Wax 2.0. Like, there's no question. Right. Just more printing and more money, and it's just more about, you know, obtaining dollars from all of the consumers. So I think everybody is nervous because the main thing here is Fanatics is going to almost have a monopoly. So anytime that happens, your defensive walls come up, and you know what that could entail. But on the other on the hopeful side, you are hoping that Michael Rubin does the community, does the hobby right, and really does show the significant change and excitement and all of the yada 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 buzzwords.
I agree totally. Like, I also agree with what Michael Rubin says, but to your point, John, I think who's to say Fanatics won't be what Panini's doing 15 years from now? You know, if they're on top for so long, there's a bad habit of companies who are on top for that long to get lazy, like you said, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, they always say they're going to try to 10X the hobby, whatever that means. But in that growth, I hope there's going to be other players coming into the space, creating more competition, and then making the hobby, making the industry overall more robust than it has been in the past. So that's the, I guess, the best case scenario that I can think of right now. But you never know, right? Especially when we're talking Monopoly. All right. You were going to say anything?
No, they're going to 10X their pockets for sure.
At the very least. Yeah. At the very least. All right. Blurb 4 is something you're mentioning, John, too, about like if this junk wax era 2.0. But I think there's in the article, it kind of recognizes that there are these patterns, right? And the story says, card collecting may be a hobby, but it is also a fragmented industry punctuated by booms and busts. In the 1990s, manufacturers flooded the market with cards, prompting prices to collapse. That's junk wax era 1.0. In the early part of the pandemic, prices surged as collectors had more time to chase wish list cards. The market has cooled some, but here's an interesting ending to that sentence. But the article says, but remains strong. So do you agree that's where we are now? That it definitely cooled some, but do you feel like it's in a good stable place, or do you feel like it's going to drop further?
Yeah, so kind of like what I mentioned before, you know, I think the three of us with Hyung, and I guess four of us with Will, but we've always been bullish, you know, that's why the podcast is called Cards to the Moon. But we're at, you know, like kind of playing off of what I just said earlier in this segment, we're kind of at a crossroads. So we're like tipping potentially on the scales of heading into Junk Wax 2.0. So I think there's a little bit of a dance that's going to happen here to make sure that the demand Is the demand, has it remained strong currently? I think so. I think that's a very accurate statement. But when you look at, for example, was it Slap Stocks or something released an IG reel, IG post today about the, you know, Panini Prism now has 65 parallels, up from 51 from last year, right? And they had this new list of so many parallels. And you should just see the comments, like people just... See, here we go again, junk wax. Like, you guys need to stop like spending these absurd amount of money on ROI that doesn't exist. And like the what's different about the current market versus the 90s is in the 90s, we didn't know about print runs and we're just buying because that was the thing to do. The current market is a lot more savvy. Like the customers, and we all know about print runs. We're very aware. So I don't think this is a situation where Panini or Topps or Fanatics can just throw product and make new product and print more product and just continue this cycle for years. And it's not going to last years and years. So that's I think in this next year or so, we'll see what happens. I think if they go over the top, the customers, the hobby is going to respond accordingly and be like, I've had enough of this. This is absolute garbage. Or if they continue to innovate and provide more and more value for the money, you'll that's where the demand will continue to stay, right? So it's going to be, I think we're right on that, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like you're saying, John, the customer base is becoming more savvy, like even in our group chats and even when we're talking about cards, we're not chasing base. We're not chasing silver prism. We're not chasing non-numbered stuff. We're going after like the higher end, the lower print numbers. And so I don't know, for me, like if I see Panini I don't really collect too much Panini product anyway, but you know, if they introduce another parallel, baseball does it all the time, right? Another color and whatever, I just disregard it. I don't care about it. Like that Halloween set. Mm. It's like, oh, they got this cats and bats and rats out of 10. It's like, okay, cool. Like I don't ever want that card, but I'm glad. Right. I'm glad it exists. Yeah. I'm glad that someone's going to enjoy that card and value that card. And I feel like just in general, the hobby like is becoming smarter about what they're chasing after and all that kind of stuff. Like I remember even a couple of years ago during the height of it, there was there's that product Topps Clearly, or even like Topps Archives, and then where they buy back the card and then they put a one of one stamp on it and then the player autographs it. And I remember seeing people post like, "Oh, one of one, like who wants to buy this $10,000?" And people are like, "You know, that's just a base card that they just took back." And then like even the auto, it's like it's usually in like really thin like pen. I don't know why they use a ballpoint pen,
the old school ballpoint pen, right? You, like, crease up the card.
Yeah, like, so it doesn't even look good. And then, like back then, like you try to tell some of these people, it's like, you know that that's not the same as like a rookie auto, and they're like, no, it's from his rookie year, it's his rookie card, and it's autographed, and it's one of one. It's like, no, it's different. It's not the same. And like, yeah, so I feel like people don't do that as much. People recognize, oh, like Topps Clearly or Topps Archives, those aren't as good as the true rookie autos or Bowman Chrome, like first autos and stuff like that. So those cards will continue to hold value and have value. But I think just us as collectors, our eyes have shifted to focus more on the rarer stuff. And all the other cards, those are the ones that will fall down in value. I think early on, you had a podcast guest. I forget who it was. Maybe Refractor Jones. I forget. It was someone. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how like almost all cards will go to zero value. Yeah. And it's just like, at first that sounded like doom and gloom. But then when you think about it, you're like, yeah, you know what? None of these cards should be worth anything. Right? Like a base rookie shouldn't be worth anything other than passing it to a kid and the kid being like, oh my gosh, I love this player, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or being part of a Topps buyback program, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's cool too. I do appreciate that.
And I think that's the key. Like, I agree with both of you saying like the customer base is getting generally more savvy in the hobby, but the innovation will be the key in terms like exactly what John mentioned earlier. And I think the next quote kind of speaks on it a little bit, and we don't have to elaborate on it, but I just wanted to kind of tie that in. And Michael Rubin here again says, the thing that I'm most excited about is the idea is 3 years old. He said, adding that Fanatics Collectibles generates north of $1 billion in revenue. And he goes on to say, we took our first sale in 2022, and we've done so much in less than 2 years, but I think we're like 10% of this journey, 20% of this journey. So there's so much innovation coming. So end quote. And then end of the day, I guess you either believe him or not, right? Like if you think his excitement and his zeal is legit, then you should be excited for the hobby and all the innovations coming. And I'm to tell you the truth, if Hyung was here, I'm sure he would agree with me. I think we lie more on the side of, yes, we kind of believe what Fanatics is doing because their track record in the last year and a half, especially with their marketing and with their different launches, has been great, to tell you the truth. Like, I can't, you know, and getting, you know, and going back to the cool factor, I think really it's just Michael Rubin inviting his celebrity friends that's making it, you know, cool. But of course, he can't do that all the time, right? But it's a good start. And so... So I'm bullish that way as well, that Fanatics is involved in that way.
Right. Did you guys, side story, did you guys see the Topps Instagram post? I think it came out like literally right before we jumped on this podcast with Michael Harris going undercover to the card show. I thought that was pretty cool. That's a good one.
He went undercover.
He put white in his beard and he put a hat on and he's walking around the card show asking, like looking at Michael Harris cards and talking about himself. And yeah,
that's good.
I thought it was good.
Yeah. I love those kind of undercover stuff.
Yeah. Nice. But going back to Michael Rubin's thing, I think, you have to want to agree with it because that's what we want to see. And if you're in the marketing world, like, I mean, looking at the sports card industry and how it was so not marketed for something that is so gigantic. You know, if you brought in somebody like a Michael Rubin or any of a top executive in the marketing space, like a guru in the marketing space, they would be drooling at the potential of a billion-dollar industry that hasn't been properly marketed, and then applying proper marketing tactics. So it's easy for Michael Rubin to talk about it's only in year three of the idea, and we're only at 10%. Those are all facts. Like, in terms of a marketing,
sure,
you know, the marketing journey, it's 100% factual. Now, whether he can deliver on the 20, 30, 40, 50, up to 100% and 10xing, that's obviously a different story. But the potential, it's certainly there. I think we'll all agree that the potential is certainly there.
Yeah,
yep.
For sure.
Yep.
Well, here's the next blurb is from the other side. The Jason Howarth, he's a senior vice president of marketing at Panini. Okay, and this is his quote. "We are the leaders in the space and have grown this category into what it is today." And then he says the global revenue for Panini from trading cards topped $1 billion in 2022, which is up from $200 million in 2010. And then he goes on to say, "We were the first trading card company to embrace case breaking when no one wanted them. And we have over 2,000 athletes, including NBA MVPs and Super Bowl MVPs, who sign our cards."
They did.
Thoughts? They did. Yeah.
Oh, I don't. You know, like, not to harp on them even further, but Panini just continues to. I mean, like, it's such an arrogant, you know, sentence quote, because you know, like, Panini had a huge, and I don't know the story. Like, I don't think we weren't collecting in 2010 during the transition of Topps Chrome to Panini. But clearly, when you have a huge shift where you get to take over licensing, and, you know, Panini at that time wasn't necessarily big in the sports card space, and they saw the opportunity to really make an impression. Obviously, you're going to put big time dollars into pushing and gaining revenue and gaining market share. So did they, you know, innovate in that space in 2010 and 2011? Perhaps they did. Are they, you know, have they grown this category into what it is? Absolutely not. Like, they're like everybody else. They fell ass backwards into a billion-dollar profit in 2022. This is my personal opinion.
right.
You know, were they, I don't really understand what they're the first card company to embrace case breaking. I guess, you know, like, maybe breaking was frowned upon, and companies didn't want to release to people or LCSs that were breaking, known to be breaking, but they're the first to be like, yeah, you're going to break, like, on a YouTube channel, we're for it. We'll continue to provide more stock. Like, I don't know if that's what they mean by that, but you know, they're clearly on the edge we don't know what's going to happen to them. So he's got to say whatever he's got to say and pump up his brand. And it comes off, you know, like, if you were in tune, you know, if this SVP was in tune with the hobby and knew where Panini stood as a brand and how we're viewing Panini right now, I think he would have been a lot more careful in how he comes across to the audience of all of us, right? You know, I just feel like he's a bit out of tune. He's a bit out of tune to be speaking like this. I know he has to speak like that, but I don't know. It's a bit nonsense to me.
Yeah, it's like saying, like, oh, we really embraced breaking. It's like, what do you mean? Like, you embraced your customer base who wanted to buy more of your product? It's like, oh, good for you. Like, guys, we're so great at this. These people want more of our product. And we said yes. Like, we're so innovative. We did it, guys. And then, like, I don't know. Right. Started in 200 million in 2010, and it topped, was it 1 billion in 2022? Yeah. But it's like, is that, do you see, like, this steady progression, or was it like everything else where in 2022 everything went crazy? Mm. Or was it 2021?
Yeah.
So it's 21, like
22, yeah.
It's like you're spinning your wheels for 10 years, and then a pandemic happened, and we're all stuck at home, and then the hobby went nuts. It's like, did you create the pandemic? Like, is that your Was that your invention? Like John said, you fell ass backwards into this.
Yeah.
And you're lucky to make a lot of money because you had exclusive rights. Like, also, you have exclusive rights to a product. Like, you can't...
should have made more.
Yeah, you should make more. Like, you should have held. You should have figured out a way to hold on to your exclusivity. That would have been the sign of you being great at this, right? But no, Panini came in, and they just took everything. They took your managers. They took your staff. They took any ideas that you had. They just took all your licenses. They didn't even ask. They just took it.
Well, you know, I agree. I tend to agree with you guys, and I kind of feel bad because we're bashing on Panini so much. And I don't know what it's going to take for them to turn things around. Like his quote sounds kind of desperate to me. But just to be fair, later on in the article, there is a store shop or a hobby shop owner in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. His name's Mike Calvanico, and he's been a shop owner for 40 years. And it says he focuses on selling boxes and cases of cards and not singles. And then the article says success to him are card series that have high resale value. And then he said, lately, Panini, not Fanatics, has issued more cards that have been a hit with his customers. And he is quoted as saying, Panini could have rolled over when Fanatics came in, but they care about the stores and the public. He said, the guys in the production development at Panini are the ones putting food on my table. I just wanted to be balanced. You know, there are people out there, store owners out there, you know, been around a while that see it the other way, I guess. And maybe, I guess, the cynical side for us is that, well, he doesn't want to adapt to what Fanatics is going to do, right? So so that's interesting to hear that perspective, I guess.
I mean, if you've ever wondered what an industry plant looks and sounds like, it's that guy.
Another conspiracy theory from
Fakey McFakerson from... Fake City, Idaho, just came up with this. Oh yeah, they took care of me. But it does kind of hint at this thing about like Fanatics really cutting out card shops and stuff like that. So I mean, I get why the card shop owner is gonna say it too, because he's scared that he's gonna lose his livelihood, right?
Sure. Yeah. So that's fair.
So I mean, you always gotta chase the money. Figure out why people are saying the things that they're saying. If you chase the money, you kind of figure it out.
Wise.
And you have to take it with, you know, latching onto what Will's saying. Yeah, you do have to obviously take it with a grain of salt. Like, this is one shop owner's experience, right? Like, that particular local rep for Panini could be the best at his job. Like, just really good with relations. And he's just having an amazing experience. It could be that. And then even in talking about Panini issuing, you know, more cards and more cards that are popular with the customers, I think that's factual. I think the reason why we're all so upset at Panini as hobbyists is because we feel like they're ruining very good brands that they've created. Like Prism is great. Select is one of them. You know, Donruss Optic. Like, there's no question Panini has either taken over and adopted or created very, very good products that we all have come to love. And we feel like they've really... pooching those brand, like really like wetting the bed or pooping the bed on those brands in the last couple of years, right? So that's why we're upset. We're you know, I give some credit where credit is due. They did create some really good products, and a lot of us are getting upset because we feel like because of their greed or whatever they're doing or stupidity or whatever they're doing in the background or lack of focus and whatever, there's a lot of these Prism or a lot of these brands that we feel are kind of going by the wayside right now, right? So that's really what fair it is. Point. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair. All right. One last blurb and then we'll wrap up hobby headlines. But this is surprising to me, actually. The article says the promotion, and they're talking about the MLB debut patch. You know, the one where for those who aren't aware, the rookies of last season, they wore a patch on their jersey for the first game they ever played in the big leagues. And then they took the patch off the uniform and they insert it into the cards, which are all in Topps Chrome update right now. So that was a big success from Fanatics/Topps. So he's saying the promotion is partly why Major League Baseball has vaulted ahead of the NBA and NFL in the licensed trading card market. According to one industry executive, sales of baseball cards this season are expected to hit about $640 million, which is up from $370 million two seasons ago when Fanatics purchased Topps. Sales of NBA, on the other hand, sales of NBA and NFL trading cards are expected to fall to about $350 million from about $550 million two seasons ago. So we see baseball going up, and then we see football and basketball going down. Surprised by that?
I mean, who's going to – I mean, the previous quote was like, oh, Panini's bringing up greater products that my clients are looking for. It's like, really? Like, who's looking for that Wemby no auto card? Like,
right.
Like, yeah. So, like, there's nothing good left in Panini, right? Like, they're going to lose all their licensing. They're not going to have good cards. They're not going to have licensed cards. Maybe I'll start collecting – Panini, now that they're going to be unlicensed, since I'm the king of collecting unlicensed cards. Maybe I'll finally start liking Panini product. But yeah, that makes sense. Like, yeah, they got nothing left for them.
So the top, so they're crediting the Topps promotion. Wait, who exactly is crediting the Topps promotion as one of the driving forces of baseball?
Well, it says according to one industry executive, so they don't name anyone.
One industry executive. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that promotion or that, you know, the chase did produce a lot for Topps, you know, paper. It was paper that it came out of, right? You know, heavily printed. I'm sure the revenues were fantastic, right? But baseball has... You know, I remember you showing the figures of baseball numbers, right? It was like football is at a 30% loss and basketball's at a, and baseball was at like a 9% loss. And I think a lot of it, yeah, perhaps promotion is a big part of it, yes. But baseball has some strong products. I know, like Bowman First, people underestimating how much fire Bowman First has taken in the last like 2-3 years, like how people have chased it and how much ROI there is in it. If you know, the moment you rip, you get all of the base cards, you send them to SEC and you can start profiting. And there is a whole little ecosystem that happens within Bowman Draft and Bowman Chrome and all of that stuff. And you know, I would credit a lot of that to the baseball revenue. So baseball has a unique little sports card culture within baseball that's different because of Bowman First, right? The development of Bowman First. Right. So I would say that's a big part of it, more so than the debut patch.
Sure. And I think that, you know, baseball cards, just a much longer history.
100%.
You know, and I think people undervalue that aspect of it. You know, the collectors are diehards. And, you know, I have friends, I'm not even talking about sports cards now, but I have friends that are like, you know, saying baseball's dying and, you know, they're all about Raptors and the basketball culture and things like that. But you know, like baseball's been around a while, and there's a reason why they've been around a while. You know, they have a strong base, and then you know, of course there's a lot of room to improve the sport of baseball, which MLB is trying to do now. But I don't think it's in any danger of like dying completely and taking the baseball card market along with it. You know what I mean? So yeah. But it was interesting. Like I found it a little bit surprising because. In a way, because, you know, basketball and NFL are getting a lot of the spotlight, you know, especially from our American collector friends. But maybe the boom already happened, you know, and everything's kind of falling down to where it probably should be.
Right.
All right. Well, you know, it was a really good read. If you haven't read the whole thing, it's on the New York Times website. Again, the article is called "Will Fanatics Upend the World of Sports Collectibles?" And they also have a quote from the card father, Rob Barris, who owns Burbank Sports Cards and a lot of other sources. So yeah, take a read and let us know what you guys think after reading it. Okay, let's go on to our next segment we call Just a Thought. And, you know, every once in a while, we like to do this segment where we just brainstorm ideas. I kind of sprung this up on you guys kind of last second. So if you don't have one, that's fine. But I wanted to bring it up because I had one idea, and I can't take credit for it. It is all Chris Begg, who's been a guest on our show a couple of times. I'm going to just read the message he just sent me randomly one day. Okay, let me just pull it up.
I love that. It's just random messages. Yeah,
it's the best. Yeah. So here's the message. He's like, I've been thinking, we have color match, we have number match, the jersey number match. We need a name match. Pulling a Vita blue refractor, or an Elijah green, a Tyler black. It needs to be a thing. So, you know what? I obviously it was hilarious, but that could be a sneaky play. You know what I mean? No one's really, and then I responded, haha, brilliant. Does Paul Goldschmidt gold refractor count? And then he goes on to say, maybe it has to be a gold shimmer. So what do you think? Name match? Do you think that has potential?
I mean,
there's more.
It's a fun thought, but could it catch on? I doubt it, because if we're really gonna really think about this seriously, like when you think about color matching, you relate the color match to the team and stuff like that, right? If I think of Sean Green, ex Blue Jays baseball player, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about the color green. Like, I associate Sean Green with baseball. I associate him with Blue Jays and the blue color. Like, yeah, not, I don't ever think of the actual color green, right? So, could it catch on? Probably not. But it's a funny thought for sure. It should catch on. That'd be fun.
I'm all for it.
Let me stop this right now.
Come on, don't burst our bubble.
Sure, you have Sean Green, you have
Devon White.
That's Blue Jay.
Oh, Devon sure. White.
That's and then right. You have the Toronto Raptors first round pick from this year.
Grady Dick.
Oh no. Oh no.
So we're gonna do a name match? What do you think that card's gonna look like? Because let me tell you, I'm not gonna wanna own it. Or are we saying it's only for people who have a last name of a color?
That's what I was thinking, but I guess you're thinking other things.
Well, all the other people, like, they deserve to have a name match. Let's get
okay.
Lameem James just had a Grady Dick posting. It was hilarious.
Did he?
It was like anyways, if you want to see it, go check it out.
It's a PG show, guys. Come on.
Like, I'm just wondering, like, what if in like 10 years he's a star, like a complete stud, and then I have to buy his jersey, and it's just gonna be, yeah, I'm just gonna have that jersey.
Who are you talking about?
Grady. Gritty.
He's gonna be in my hall of jerseys. Like, I have a DeRozan jersey, I have a Lowry jersey, I have a Valanciunas jersey. I just picked up a Pascal Siakam jersey, and then there's gonna be Grady right there.
Oh man, he's a meme just waiting to be bursted.
I love his attitude. He's got such a great personality.
You know, he has to be used to it by now, right? Like, he grew up with that name. It's like, he knows how to play it off.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, that's a fun one. You guys have any other just a thought ideas, or was this enough for the day?
Oh, I got one. It's not as funny. Do I have to start it with just a thought? Like, is that what?
How no, this, you
just a thought. I think we should just get rid of grading altogether.
Whoa.
Yeah. So what I think is if I can see a noticeable defect with the card, it should be a 9. Well, we'll go PSA grading scale.
Okay.
If I can't see it, like after looking at the card for 30 seconds, if I don't notice damage, just make it a 10. Okay.
Hmm.
If I can see damage immediately within a minute of looking at it or 30 seconds of looking at it, make it a 9. And then if it's like got some like I don't know, like train tracks ran through it or like somebody chewed on the edge of it or whatever, then just grade it like as poor or authentic. Like there should just be 3 levels of grades. It's like clean, okay, and horrible. And that should just be it. Grading should only exist to authenticate and to let you know, like, hey, eye appeal wise, this is pretty good. Because let me tell you, I'm preempting my pick one later on, but grading is stupid and it makes no sense. And like, you know, we were talking about Junk Wax era earlier. You have these Ken Griffey Jr. cards. There's 3 million of them. And then, like, the only thing that differentiates the one that I have in my card box and the PSA, like, the one of, like, real good value is that PSA graded it a 10, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, who are you, PSA? Like, who do you think you are? Like, why do I have to listen to you about what the value of this card is? Because it's the same card, you know? I don't know. I'm so over grading. I'm so done with
it. I really don't have much to say, but, you know, it just wouldn't be the same without a, you know, anti-grade rant from Will.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while. Yeah. There it was, folks. There it was.
Just the thought. Can we get rid of grading altogether?
No.
Will's trying to make it. Every time he comes back, he's going to try to, whatever segment we do, he's going to try to make an anti-grade focus.
No. Like, you know what? I also wonder, like, in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, like, maybe will there be less of a value on grading? Like, will we focus more on the rarity of a card? Like, if it's out of 5 red in, like, Topps product, that's out of 5. It's super rare. And it's like, I don't know. You can't tell there's damage, but it's graded a PSA 9. Or in Hyung's case, it's a PSA 7. And he has no idea why it's a PSA 7.
Right.
Yeah, like, are we going to look at that and be like, you know what? I'm not even going to acknowledge PSA in their grading scheme, like how they graded this card, because it looks amazing to me. And yeah, it's out of 5. I think that's a super rare card.
I'm already doing that. Like, I would take the lower grade, even if it's 8 and it's a lower serial number.
Yes, you know what I mean? Like, yes, it's slowly happening.
Value investor Brent, he's been talking about that as well. Like, people, that's a wise, smart move, I think.
Yeah, that's the first. That's the first step, gentlemen. It's the first step to toppling.
Especially for newer modern cards, because the older ones you get, right? Because they're no parallels, and the grading is what differentiates the rarity, right? In terms of the condition and all that. But there's no reason for it now. Like, to your point, Will, like,
no, there is
brand new cards out of a pack. They should all be 9 or 10, anyways.
Yeah.
I'm there with you.
The scary part is that everybody who owns big cards right now, especially in PSA 10 slabs, you're essentially paying for the brand, right? So if in the future PSA collapses, like the value of so many of our investments just will go down the tubes because of just the brand. So that is a scary point. But going back to Will's thing, I'm on the complete opposite end. Like, I love grading, but I love the core root of grading, because that's how I was even as a kid. Like, you guys, No, we talked about this select, right? Like I was the type of kid who I would rip a card out of my pack. And if I got that Todd Van Poppel, it immediately went into a sleeve and then a top loader, just like we do today. Like at 8 years old, that's what I was doing. I would quite carefully check. I mean, back then as a kid, we didn't know about surface issues, but you could tell about chipping. We didn't really pay too much attention on centering. Like we didn't think that was a big deal, but certainly corners. So corners was corners, kind of main grading, you know, to the naked eye. So for me, like it very much bothered me if I had a card that had a dinged corner, like even at a young age. So the fact that there is grading now, that somebody that can kind of authenticate or a professional that can tell me that this card is actually a pristine condition card in all aspects of the card, I love that. Now, moving forward, I think the frustration that Will has that many people have is the fact there's multiple grading companies and they all do the same job and they're all equally good at the job, but one is worth 10x versus the other just because of the brand name, PSA versus BGS, PSA versus SGC. And I get that part. That part, the frustration there is valid. It shouldn't exist, but it is what it is. It's, you know, consumerism and branding, and it's, you know, you can't avoid it, but it does suck that, you know, an SGC 10 and PSA 10 is basically the exact same great, perfect, near perfect card, but the value of the two are so different just because one is in a different kind of case, right? So, yeah.
But also, it's like we rarely trust our graders. Like you're saying, like, oh, I want an expert to look at this and tell me what I'm seeing or not seeing. But often it's the case where these graders, they have some of them, I'm sure many of them, have worse eyes than we do and have minimal training to really grade these cards. Like I submitted a PSA, I think 20 cards to PSA, and I wrote out the form of what these cards were, and 12 out of my 20 card submission were mislabeled. And so if they couldn't even figure out the labeling when I told them what the card was, how can I trust them on their grade that they gave? Now, mind you, like 10 of the cards were from 1991 Topps Traded Tiffany. That's a really hard set to evaluate because there's no like key indicator. There's no obvious indicators of whether it's a Tiffany card or just a standard traded card. But what you know about the Tiffany card when you do research is that there's a little bit of yellowing or it just looks a little bit yellower and a little bit more faded than the standard traded card. So I got those cards graded back lower than I thought they were going to be. And I'm assuming it's because they thought this was just the regular Topps Traded and it had like a weird glossy kind of finish on it. And so they lowered the grade. Because other than that, the corners, the edges, the surface, they were all pristine. So it's like,
so they labeled it Topps Traded when it should have been Topps Traded Tiffany?
Yeah.
That's
and then so I had to get all, thankfully they relabeled them all. But it's like, how can I trust them that their grades are accurate when they couldn't even get their labeling accurate? And then my Vladdy, it's a Topps Chrome out of 5 home run jacket, the home run jacket variation. I wrote the form. It's 2022 or 2023, whatever it was. Topps Chrome, red out of 5, blah, blah, blah. And I got the card back. And it says Topps Chrome Sonic Red Ray Wave. Like they just like made up what the card was. It's like I don't know who gave them that information. They just
I didn't know that.
My info and disregarded it and was like, hey, I don't see Ray Waves, but I'm just gonna say that this is Ray Wave. I don't see that it's from Topps Chrome Sonic, but I'm just gonna put that. And it's just like, what? How?
This is why Will's upset about grading in with PSA in particular.
Yeah, and SGC, you know what? I'm sick and tired of 9.5s. Like, seriously. Just give it a 10. You wonder why you don't have any value in the market? It's because you keep giving out 9.5s.
Oh. All right.
I'm so bitter.
I think Will could go on and on. So let's end the That's a great way to end the Just a Thought segment. Thanks for that, Will. You know what? Let's open it up to our listeners too. If you have just a thought about anything to improve the hobby, we'd love to hear it as well. All right, let's finish off today's episode with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. And this is when each of us, we present two cards and then we debate which one we would rather invest in. All right, so Hyung usually starts things off, but since he's not here, John, do you want to do the honors and go first?
Yes, I'm thankful you chose me because I was nervous one of you guys would have the same 1v1 and I do not have a backup thought of. So Super Bowl is coming up. At the time of this recording, Super Bowl has not happened. It is coming up. And I think, you know, especially for the three of us that haven't really dabbled in football cards, sometimes you want to. And when you think about dabbling, there are usually, as a present date for most collectors, there's two names. So I'm going to put it up. I think you know what's coming. As an investment from this point on, and I'm not going to say specific cards. We can get into that. But for now, Brady versus Mahomes. Who would you pick if you're just picking one person to invest in from here on forward? Is it Brady or is it Mahomes?
I'll go first. I would have never picked Mahomes. I would have always sided with Brady. But this year, them making it to the Super Bowl, it's like, wow, this is actual sustained excellence. And I mean, who knows how much Travis Kelce has left in the tank. Like, these amazing tight ends, eventually they wear down, like Gronk did and all of that. But man, Mahomes has been good for so long, and he's still 28 years old right now, I think. And so, you know, maybe he plays till he's 45 like Brady. So he's still got 1,000 years left to win more Super Bowls. So I'm gonna go with Mahomes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. You know, like, this is a harder question than I thought originally, right? Like, for me, I was like, oh, it's the stupid Brady, right? Like, he's got the Super Bowl rings and you know, like, he's played till the mid-40s, but that's not guaranteed for Mahomes.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, something could happen, God forbid, and then that's it, right? But I like the optimism, the enthusiasm from Will and from all Kansas City Chiefs fans, because his talent's legit, obviously. The only thing I was really thinking about is, in terms of investment pieces, like, Brady's key rookie cards are, you're paying a premium, obviously, for
very expensive,
all that he's done so far. Yeah. Whereas, you know, of course, there are, you know, there's a IG reel, I don't know if you saw it, someone asked Mahomes, does he have his own $4 million card? And he's like, no, I wish I had my $4 million card, but I do collect some of my own, you know, rookie cards, you know? So that was kind of cool to hear. But, you know, there are some of Mahomes' cards that are, you know, like, it's a few thousand, and I could see that going up. Like, it could be a good investment, you know what I mean? Like, the, you know, we always talked about the Optic Holo, like, a couple years ago, you and I, John, right? About getting that. That's probably about a couple thousand. And if he continues on this career trajectory, yeah, it could 2x, 3x. But that being said, I still go back to that football's a violent sport. Anything could happen. Brady is kind of the, you know, exception that he's lasted how long he has. So I'm paying the premium for what's already written in the history books. I'm going Brady.
Hey, Will, if on Monday, Kansas City does not win, would your answer be different?
No. How many Super Bowls?
He's got two, right?
He's got two, right?
Yeah. This is his fourth Super Bowl appearance?
In like 5 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Without question, if he wins, it's like a dynasty in the making. So there's that. Yeah. But if honestly, he loses...
No, because before this year, I would have never considered Mahomes as like one of the GOATs, because I was just like, you know what, you gotta do it way more. You gotta do it way more often to start being considered. But four times in 5 years, two wins potentially by the time this recording comes out, he's won his third. He's done it all, I think, quicker than Brady.
That's amazing. Yeah. One thing I will say on in favor of picking Mahomes is the team wasn't that great. There are a lot of holes for KC, you know, Chiefs, and they still got to the Super Bowl. So imagine in the offseason, they pick up a couple more pieces. I mean, then we could really talk dynasty. Like despite the fact that the Niners have a much better overall team, you know, they got more skilled players, and they were expected to go far. Like, I think, I don't know if a lot of people, like, I know a bunch of people that thought Ravens would easily beat the Chiefs last couple of weeks ago, right? So yeah, that's one more point for Mahomes, but I'm still going Brady.
Man, I'm 50-50 still. I kind of go both ways. I think I understand both, but I have been looking for a huge Brady card for a while now. There's just too many cards, you know, like I think I said Sidney Crosby, you know, but number two or number three, I do want a Brady at some point. Like it's on the list of big cards that I want. I haven't chosen exactly what. But now with Mahomes, like we were saying, like fourth Super Bowl in 5 years, potentially after, by the time of this recording, could be his third Super Bowl win. Man, like I think all those years we were saying he's underrated. You know, his pricing is underrated versus Justin Herbert and like these like young kids who are like double, triple his price. We could be looking at it like a generational stud here. It's kind of panning out that way. Like this Mahomes looks every bit legit, and we continue to kind of underrate his super. And maybe we're not, you know, because like people in the football world are already saying this guy by the end of the weekend could finish like already be in conversation of top five quarterbacks of all time already in his young career, right? So that is unprecedented for like a guy this early in his career to be considered top five all time. So I think what gets me the most, and you know, it's a little bit unfair because I didn't really share pricing with you guys, but Brady is probably about double the price for most kind of like average apple to apple cards. So I'm going to give like the 51% to Mahomes. I'm going to pick Mahomes because I think it's just a little bit, it's a pretty solid investment at this point, I think. And the pricing is a bit underrated for, I think, who people are finally realizing Mahomes is. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe, you know, by the time we end this podcast, I'll probably flip back to Brady. But for now, I'll pick 51 of Mahomes.
I just Googled it. So Tom Brady, 7 Super Bowl wins. And then Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana, both with 4. Troy Aikman with 3. And then the next most is just like 10 quarterbacks with 2 wins, including my guy, Ben Roethlisberger, and, you know, Eli and Peyton. And that's where Mahomes is right now. So Mahomes is already tied for the 5th most Super Bowl wins with 2 wins. So, I mean, like you were saying, John, like, I think he's already in the conversation for top 5 of all time, especially if he wins. If he wins, it's like, yeah, you are top 5. You know, you're tied with Troy Aikman.
Right.
So.
All right. It's a Mahomes sweep. Let's go. Well.
did we convince you? Did we switch you over?
He's searching on you know, the Apollo tonight.
It's funny. Mahomes is on my watch list all the time. Yeah. So. In reality, I'm probably looking to pull the trigger on Mahomes more than a Brady. So, all right, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah. Well, you got one?
That's good. Yeah. Okay. Mine, like I teased earlier on, it's grading related. So, you know, one of the things I love about Hyung is every time you give him something to do, he finds a way to not do it and do it weird. So I'm going to go in honor of him. I'm not choosing two cards. I am choosing grading companies, or I'm choosing grades. So you can choose to have an SGC 10 of a card and a BGS 9.5, so both are gem mint, or you can have a PSA 10 and a PSA 9 of that card. So it's PSA 9 and PSA 10 versus SGC 10 and BGS 9.5. And I'm going to give you guys a couple cards to kind of help you make your decision. Okay. In honor of all of our Canadian listeners, 2015 Upper Deck Connor McDavid. It's the first time I'm talking about a hockey card. I'm pretty excited. a PSA 9 sold on average in the last 3 months for about $950. PSA Young 10. Guns? Yeah, I think it's Young Guns. PSA Young 10 guns, for yeah. $2,350. So PSA 10, mm-hmm. $2,350. SGC 10 sold for $1,550. And a BGS 9.5 sold for $1,350. So if you combine the totals for PSA 9 and 10, it's about $3,300. The SGC 10 and the BGS 9.5 total to about $2,900. So which one would you rather have? Two gem mint cards from quote-unquote inferior companies? Or a PSA 10 with a PSA 9.
Oh, that's a good one.
Man, I am. I think Will know my answer, and he probably will not like it. I am certainly going for the PSA 10, PSA 9. There's no question. That's an easy one for me. I think in terms of the money value and long term value, because again, if you want to hedge some of your risk and you don't know where, if PSA is going to uphold this kingdom forever, there's obviously some opportunity there for BGS and SGC to climb up in value. But for the time being, I think it's an easy answer because PSA 9s are pretty liquid for the most part. Yeah. And the fact that if you are going to PC it or it's going to be a part of like your big collection, I think for the most part, for me, the PSA 10 is appealing. And if I needed to bail on it, the PSA 10 just gives me such strong and such liquid return that it's, that's the unfortunate part of grading right now is even if you do like the tuxedo look of the SGC and you do like SGC, you know, CGC labels because they're clear and the acetate plastic is amazing and immaculate, whatever reasons you have, BGS, you know, Clarky, you like BGS. Mm-hmm. If you have a huge card and you think it has a great chance at a 10, you are 100% picking PSA 10, PSA to get that money return, right? So it's just the unfortunate part of the way the money and the brand value is shaking out right now. So yeah, PSA 10 for me.
You know, I was really leaning, like I wanted to say BGS and SGC and I might have said it if the comps that you gave us, Will, if the BGS SGC side was higher, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, you know what? I like BGS already, like John mentioned. That's, you know, and SGC, you know, I've been able to sell SGC cards in the past, you know, so it's somewhat liquid. And then on the other side, PSA 10 obviously is the king and it's premium, but PSA 9 right now is essentially the price of a raw card. You know, any good condition raw card that people hope to gem, that's what PSA 9s are going for. You know, so I don't see a lot of value in PSA 9s, but I do agree with what you said, John, that even PSA 9s at card shows are pretty liquid. You get rid of them. You might have to, you know, take something off the price, but you can get rid of them, right? So with those reasons, at the end of the day, the PSA brand is just too strong right now. So yeah. I'm going to go with the 10 and 9.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even give you the other cards. So like Mike Trout's rookie card, the 9 and the PSA 9 and the 10 total to about $1,450. The SGC 10 and the BGS 9.5 only total to $1,350.
Damn.
Right.
The 10, that's...
Yeah, and in both situations, the PSA 10 is almost double the BGS 9.5 in terms of price.
Man,
that's just crazy. Like, it's crazy how differently the card is valued for nothing other than the label that's on the outside, right? We all agree. Right. We all agree that if you have a BGS 9.5 and an SGC 10 and a PSA 10, quality of that card wise, they're equal. They're mm-hmm. negligible. You shouldn't be able to tell any difference in the card, right? But the price is drastically different just because it has PSA on the label versus the other ones. I was going to say, I was going to bring this up, this example up. PSA 10 1986 Fleer Jordan card. There are six sales in the last 3 months. One of them is like super high up, so I discounted that. The average sale for those, the five other sales, $200,000, which is, you know, down a lot from the peak. But a BGS 9.5 sold for, on average,
$31,000. Wow.
So it's just like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about here? It's $170,000 less valuable because it's in a BGS slab. And so for that very reason, clean sweep, I have to pick PSA 9 and PSA 10. But the whole point of this exercise is to just say this makes no sense. This is the most hobby logic, illogical thing that we do. Other than, you know what, the other day I was driving and I was just like drifting off in my imagination. And I thought to myself, man, I really care so much about cardboard with people's pictures on them. I love it so much.
Love it.
Love it so much.
Yes. Yes.
PSA 9 and PSA 10, clean sweep.
I told you, like any segment, Will's just going to try to make it about grading.
I just want people, like, do we all not see how ridiculous this is?
You know what? People need to open their eyes for sure. All right, let's end off this already long episode, which I love, by the way, but with my pick one. All right, and this has to do with the article that we went through, the New York Times article, and I reserve this just for my own pick one. So the sentence here in that article says, Fanatics has issued, and we're talking about Victor Wembanyama cards, okay? Fanatics has issued cards with Mr. Wembanyama in street clothes because of the whole licensing thing, right? While Panini has issued unsigned Wembanyama cards, i.e. the no autograph, which is selling for $1,000 right now. I don't know if you saw my reel. Raw cards, just over $1,000 each. That's going to definitely plummet in a couple of weeks. But with that said, would you rather have, at least right now, Wembanyama in street clothes, aka like the Topps Now autograph card, right? You know, you don't have any logos or official uniforms on it. Or would you have the unsigned Wembanyama cards, not the no auto, but just say there's a Panini Kaboom, okay? A Panini Kaboom Wembanyama, right? Obviously can't be signed, or the Topps Now auto that we've seen before. Which one would you rather have?
Was the Topps Now auto? Was it on card?
Yeah.
Is it on card?
I believe it was.
I got my answer.
Yeah.
I feel like my answer. Yeah, it's definitely the auto for sure. Because even when I think even when I think of Tom, like me collecting or getting a Tom Brady card, and obviously my wheelhouse is not Bowman Chrome Refractor. Like my favorite Tom Brady rookie, if I could just holy grail get one for free, it's the Upper Deck SP, the SP, is it SP Authentic? No, what is it? SP that's numbered out of 1250 or whichever that SP is.
Yes, Upper SP Deck. Authentic, yeah.
Like that is my holy grail, Tom. That's the card that I would love to have. But in terms of my wheelhouse, when I'm looking at all the remaining, you know, that are kind of in my bracket price range, you know, there's like Upper Deck Black Diamond and there's Upper Deck Gold Reserve. And to be honest, the one that for me that's most appealing right now is the Fleer Auto, the one where he's in the Michigan jersey, even though it's his rookie card. Yeah, because I think the appeal of rookie auto, I think, has a better long-term value. I don't know. I'm just, the auto is going to be, especially in this collectible world that's kind of we're morphing into for sports cards. I think the on-card auto, you know, awesome relics, I think that's going to start to really make a big comeback. So 10 years from now, if and when Wembanyama is considered a top 20 and he's one of the all-time greats or whatever, or 10, 20 years from now, and you look back at his best rookie cards, and even if you know, not even flawless, you know, we're not talking like the $1 million ones, but in a $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 range, I think the on-card autos are going to be a big part of that. And it's unfortunate it's Topps Now, but, you know, it makes it more rare. Mm. Like that, it is, those are the only ones available. So I think even in the future, those Topps Now cards will be worth more than a Wembanyama Kaboom or any other card that is, you know, that hasn't, that doesn't have an autograph on it. So maybe I'm wrong, okay. But the auto appeals to me.
All right, before Will goes, because I'm going with Topps Now Auto as well, for those reasons. I'm an on-card auto guy. Will is going to be the one that decides if it's a sweep or not, because he's Mr. Unlicensed. I'm really curious to see which way he goes.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I was going to ask, what do you think happens? When does Topps get the basketball license?
2025 or 26, I can't remember which sport.
Do you think that first auto will be considered like Wemby's first auto?
Like the rookie.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, not the Topps Now, but the like in 2 years
when time, he has his license.
When his first official, you know, Topps card and it's autoed. I feel like it's like a special case where people will look at that card with a lot of fondness and treat that as like a special card. So to me, it kind of devalues the Topps Now card, because I think eventually people are going to be like, I'd rather have his first year auto or his auto from his first licensed year kind of thing.
Right.
And then
because One example I know is from hockey. Jack, and I guess it depends, right? If they release, let's say, they re-release National Treasures, Wemby, and they put the rookie sign on it with the auto, I think that would make it, that's what would make it if they brought back the rookie logo. Because what happened in hockey was, and somebody can confirm this, I don't know the exact story, but Jack Eichel, I think he was a Leaf, in his rookie season 2015, I think because of Connor McDavid year, he was a Leaf athlete. So Upper Deck didn't have the rights to his autograph. So they have a Future Watch card numbered to 999, but it's non-autoed. And then 3 years later, when Jack Eichel did sign with the NHLPA or whatever and became Upper Deck, they re-released his Future Watch auto with the auto on it in 2018 Upper Deck SP. So you can actually get, or I don't know how you get it. Maybe it was a redemption or whatever. But anyways, in 3 years later, they re-released. So if you look at Jack Eichel's Future Watch Auto, it actually says 2018 Future Watch Auto. And you're like, what the heck? That's not his rookie year, because they re-released it later when they did get the, right? So if Panini or Topps or whoever brings back the proper card with the rookie sign, everything's there and then Victor signs it just like it would. And if it's years later, I think it could work. You're right.
And so because of that, and because I love inserts, so what I'll say is this. If it was the Topps Now Auto versus a Wemby Color Blast, I'm going to pick the Color Blast.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that no autograph garbage, I don't even know what set that was. Whatever that top goes. Next day or whatever, next day autos or whatever. If it's that set, I'm just like, no, I'm not interested. But a Wemby Color Blast, I think, would be the only Kaboom card.
Same?
No. I don't really like the newer Kabooms. I'm a little bit of a snob with the Kabooms. I only really like Vladdy and Bo's Kaboom year.
Yeah. Okay, well, I didn't know actually which way you would go, but there you go. Mr. Unlicensed stays true to himself.
Oh, Panini's right. The licensed one.
Or the You're right.
Yeah. You guys are joining me in the King of Unlicensed.
That's right. All right. Well, another fun episode. Whenever we have John and Will on at the same time, we know we're going to go long, but I always have a blast hosting the show with them. So I hope you guys enjoyed it too. We thank you guys for always tuning in week after week, and we'll have a brand new episode for you guys next week. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram @5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung @integritysportscards, or John at TradeU@Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.